The man must literally go through the valley of death, not of the physical body, but of himself, naked of all things. Then and then only for him can the light dawn. For then the spiritual sunlight breaks on the way, which is also the truth and the life. Thus only can there come growth and power, peace and joy to the soul entering on the universal, to the babe, in spirit about to grow to spiritual manhood in the tender and everlasting arms. Has it never seemed strange to you that the souls of men of forcefulness and intellectual power should never return from the unseen to communicate with the men of earth? The answer lies in the foregoing. They cannot. I look to all of you here to put forward this message of mine, which will increase in power and clarity as I become more accustomed to this medium. You realize my utter dependence on you to give this message to the world? I am sure you will be faithful. I can but hope that what I am able to tell you will clear away the doubts of those who question and the credulity of those who too readily accept the teachings of spiritualism. No words of mine can detract one iota from the great love and true communion which can assuredly take place between those on earth and those in spirit. Not for one instant would I shake the belief of thousands who have received comfort from no ledge of the spirit world. I would give a higher conception of it, something not only enabling to the spiritualists themselves but to the whole community. We work for an impersonal, for a more divine love to be brought into the hearts of men, so that they may live in truth as brothers rather than only talk about brotherhood. I hold no other desire. May God grant it. I believe that He will give me the power and opportunity to carry this message to the uttermost parts of the earth. Even then I do not speak of immediate or wide success. What is required of you is to be as babes, ready to be guided, ready to be used as willing channels for the power of the Spirit. This may seem an ideal, perhaps, but only in fulfilling it will you find your joy, your own kingdom of heaven. You may well thank God for the opportunity which is offered. God bless Old White Eagle. He is one of the shining ones. To you he is just Old White Eagle, to us something more, but sufficient be it that he is just your loving companion. Let us leave it there. Now follows the record of the next meeting. White Eagle. In the silence, in your hearts, know God's love. Then you cannot fail. Those assembled here have placed a sacred trust on you. God sees purity of heart and sincerity of purpose, and knows that in spite of the dross and weariness of the flesh a spiritual illumination will pour through these channels. We desire you to continue, but only at intervals as the power assembles. For at present only a small amount of material can come through at any one time, but we shall endeavor to give quality in the message. Arthur Conan Doyle continued after a long pause. When I have managed to adjust myself better to the medium, we will continue our pleasant little talk. It requires a certain amount of practice, I find, that is, in the control of the physical body of the medium, to be able to give through her consecutive and clear ideas. Taps meditatively with fingers of right hand on chair. Yes, 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 let us just have a friendly chat. I think it is easier, so that we warm up to our subject later. Yes, a friendly chat is the best way to commence. I used to think that everything was very easy in the spirit world. In fact, I made a point of painting pretty pictures of it. I would not take away one iota of anyone's belief and hope, but I would like now to give a clearer idea of the state to which one passes after leaving the physical body. It is extremely difficult to explain to a finite mind the actual facts concerning the mental state of the individual soul after the change of death, because a different experience comes to each man, so one cannot lay down any hard and fast rules. There is nevertheless a state, or intermediate condition through which one passes, the experience lasting perhaps for a few days, weeks, months, or continuing for many hundreds of years. Question. What was your first impression after passing? It was entirely different from what I had expected, and that is what most people, orthodox and spiritualist alike, will find, a very different summerland or heaven from what they had expected. The nature of that new life turns largely on the quality of the new arrival's mentality, but still more on what his attitude has been during his former life towards his fellows and towards human life in general. That is to say, a man may find himself much better off in the next life than he or anyone else had anticipated. On the other hand, he may find himself in complete bondage. The power to create, either mentally or physically, is the gift of every man. On his creative power rests the crux of the whole business of the afterlife. The man of ability whose bent lies in the creating of characters in literature, or in the painting of pictures, or the writing of poetry, in the creation either of beauty or the reverse by his positive creative thought, is very surely creating his environment and his habitation when he is freed from the flesh. What of my first impressions? Well, I can speak only for myself. Everyone does not at once realize that he has passed out of his physical body. One seems to be in process of leaving but has not actually left. One is still able to see, and to some extent contact, earth and earth conditions. It is rather a terrible sensation when one endeavors to express oneself to oneness friends and is unable to make any impression on them, and when some souls here find, as they do, their former deeds are still working evil in the minds and hearts of souls on earth, it is terrible to be unable to arrest the forces one has loosed. That is the main idea, that the creations of oneness own brain go on and on like the waves of a rolling sea that are ever beating against the minds of many fellow creatures. When these creations are beautiful, it is a heavenly and immeasurable joy to see the good in them radiating through the human universe. But when it is otherwise, I dare paint no picture of this state. I would explain that there are differing degrees of mental activity in the spiritual world. The more highly developed is the released soul mentally and spiritually, the greater will be the degree of joy it will experience, whereas in the lower grades of astral life, the light and shade effect on the soul is not so apparent. Astral memories and interferences, I intend to deal fully with that question because there is so much in spiritualism of, I would not say untruth, but of misrepresentation. You have already, of course, gained some knowledge of the power of thought, and are perhaps aware that a thought in your own mind, if powerful enough, can be photographed. If you will compare a spirit photograph of myself, lately published in a psychic journal, with the photograph you yourselves have received, you will observe that the former lacks intelligence and vitality, while the latter gives, I flatter myself, an intelligent representation. This lack of intelligence and vitality can be found throughout the phenomena of spiritualism, in manifestations by means of Ouija boards or materializations, or the direct voice. These phenomena are comparable to bubbles, prick them, and if they lack a sustaining intelligence, they fall to nothing. Investigate this for yourselves by your own observation, and you will prove the existence of a great sea of etheric impression, which lingers around or clings to particular places such as the former scenes of a soulless life on earth. Unknown to the person concerned, such thought forms, if very intense, will live on. For instance, in a house much loved by its former owner, people may feel presences passing them on stairways, hear whisperings in rooms, and even an apparition may appear to scare the inhabitants. These phenomena are not due to spirits, of course, but to memories that cling to places and live on. In churches and other old buildings with accumulated power, many such forms and lingerings will frequently be seen by clairvoyants and described as spirits. Not at all, they are merely the thought, vibrations of a bygone age. I do not wish for one moment to belittle the value of all spiritualistic phenomena. Undoubtedly there are genuine manifestations. But there still remains much which is merely shadowy. There are many spheres in which human thought can manifest, and these must be considered. But it must also be remembered that unprincipled spirits can manipulate astral thought, forces to suit their own mischievous purposes. The crux of the whole matter depends on the quality of the mind or the purity of the aspirations of the person who would communicate with a spirit. If a human mind is attuned to a spiritual sphere of love and service, a perfectly intelligent communication will be the result. But if the man's mind be only nebulous, untrained and lacking in spiritual understanding, trouble of some sort will be the outcome. Speaking of his personal self, Arthur Conan Doyle continued, "It is not that personal part of me that I want to continue to live in the spirit world. I want to forget the old personal self of Arthur Conan Doyle, for over here personalities, although sweet and dear to us all, take a subsidiary place. It is the Christ-light that we should all follow. We must endeavor to bring it to clear and perfect expression in the hearts and lives of men. When I think of my former errors of thought, and when I see what resulted from them, oh, my anguish! Oh, my despair! Dear God, I ask no more than to be able to give a clearer description of this truth to others. Only one thing in human life truly matters, and this is that men should realize for themselves the redeeming power of Christ's love. For only if the Christ Spirit is awake in them, is abiding within them, do they live. All these phenomena, all this continual running to mediums by people who want to keep in continual touch with the dead, is wrong. Men must seek rather for the living light of truth, and for realization of the redeeming love, which knowledge of the laws governing human survival may help them to understand. Only with this object in view should men seek to lift the veil between the two worlds. Under consideration, namely, psychic or supernormal phenomena, are incomparably the most important among all the facts presented to us by the whole of experience from the philosophical point of view, so that it is the duty of every man of science to get acquainted with them and study them thoroughly. Schopenhauer. At the next meeting, Arthur Conan Doyle returned to this important theme. Sometimes we see those people who can act as mediums as a light radiating through the fog which envelops the earth, and we must make contact with that light as best we can. Picture yourself in a London street on a foggy winter's night, and you will see how the earth looks to us, and perhaps grasp some of our difficulties. Yet it need not always be so. Sometimes when we return and find things clear, cut and true, the mind of the medium happy and bright with no ripple of depression or worry to disturb reception, we are able to sail in and make a clear impression on her brain. It is comparatively rare, however, to get a perfectly clear and definite message through, since there is always a residue of the medium's mentality through which we have to press. Mediumship is a fine art as well as a calling, and as mankind in general is only just awaking to the value of the spiritual life, mediums themselves remain strangely ignorant of the increased powers which might be theirs. It is necessary for a medium to be well balanced, sane, sound and true. The majority of the communications received by the spiritualists come from the denizens of the higher astral, from souls both good in intention and pure in motive, although of limited knowledge and outlook. What they pass on is more or less their own personal opinion. For this reason we find that many controls in spiritualistic circles set out early their own viewpoint and outline their own ideas. For he who dwells in the astral spheres narrows down his experience of the after life, much as a man on earth clings to fixed opinions, political or religious. Maybe he thinks that he possesses the whole truth, and that his convictions are final. Every soul, however, and this is important, must eventually walk that path whereon he becomes cleansed from all assertion. It is of this heaven world that I would continue to speak tonight. The spiritualist may not declare that in his contact with the first three or four or even seven astral planes he has found all heaven. He has yet far to go and will find many snares, pitfalls, and illusions in his contacts with the astral, psychic or magnetic forces which surround the human environment are often responsible for phenomena which are too readily accepted as evidence of communication from a spirit. Much can be found in the sitter's own mentality and magnetism to account for these, and then also there are deceiving spirits which find their amusement in the impersonation of well-known personalities. This I have myself witnessed with some disquiet. Sometimes a medium will himself create a thought, form which in time becomes so endowed with animation as to attach itself to its creator, be seen by other clairvoyants, and actually give messages through its medium. This also I have seen. This is not necessarily due to conscious fraud. Many people when they come into spiritualism strongly desire to become mediums. Circles for development are formed. And when the sitter is told that he has mediumistic powers, a condition of self, hypnotism can take place. A thought, form can thus become so backed and clothed that it becomes realistic. We have already said that astralities, and these are also astralities, are merely dead things, or masks which can be easily detected. Any true spiritual contact holds always its own ring of truth. It is certainly not wrong, nor is it undesirable, for you to seek communion with those in the spirit life. Neither is it wrong for you to give your friends an opportunity of returning to communicate. In many instances, such communication is of the utmost value and help to both of the parties concerned. But, having had that experience, the man in the spirit world having been able to send his messages of reassurance, both of those concerned should realize that there is work to be accomplished in the next world which cannot be done if the spirit is continually being held back by those who mourn its passing. After a pause, Arthur Conan Doyle continued, "It may help you to understand me better if I give my own experience of control. I find the easier way to use this particular medium is not through her subconscious but through her super-conscious mind. We have already said that man, broadly speaking, can make contact with several planes of the next life. If he be attuned only to the lower astral, he must not expect anything very uplifting, but if a medium can be induced to raise his or her consciousness, so as to open up the superconscious, a true spiritual contact can be established. My best work through mine Esther has always been through her superconscious self and not by control through the brain. Although I cannot hold her by an automatic or hypnotic control, I can pour facts and teaching through her spiritual intelligence. Therefore do not attempt to discuss these messages with her afterwards, or confuse her conscious mind with ideas. Leave her alone as much as possible, and mentally isolated. Then I can do my work. During that work, seen clairvoyantly, you would witness an illumination around the head which projects for 2 or 3 yards, of which the upper part tapers into a golden beam of light. In many communications through mediumship you will get the automatic control of which I speak. Then you will sometimes see much that will remind you of departed friends, or hear short sentences so like in style and manner that the identity seems certain. It cannot be sustained for very long, however, for this is the product of the automatic trance control, which is a kind of hypnosis of mind and body. In such cases little more than an automaton will be functioning and the flow of inspiration is checked. Control of the superconscious self of the medium, on their other hand, will bring about a clear and satisfactory reflection of the nature and personality rather than the mannerisms of the communicating spirit. There is but a small percentage of what is called subconscious mind stuff coming through spiritualistic channels. What is usually called subconscious can be attributed rather to the conscious mind of the medium interfering with the spirit control. The core or inner life of the subliminal self remains always in contact with the universal life, and thus can be and is inspired and influenced by higher beings, which usually operate in a band rather than singly. In our particular instance, the messages are transmitted down through the spheres. Sometimes we obtain a clear channel, and are able to express our theme clearly and well, while at others there is a certain crossing of currents and vibrations, so that when we read the message afterwards, through your minds, we feel a sense of dissatisfaction and sadness. Obviously our thoughts have not reached you with the clarity we could have wished. Sometimes we find it impossible to convey our exact meaning. In spite of all these barriers, the veil thins between the two worlds, and we shall find proofs of survival in the years to come will not so much depend on communications coming through recognized mediums, but rather will win acceptance because the majority of men and women will have become awakened and alive to the reality and presence of unseen powers around them. At present man is dulled to them, or even dead, as was Lazarus in his tomb until called to life by the Master. A medium's mind must be flexible and easily influenced, yet under perfect control. It is no easy matter to attain and retain this combination of self-control with the sensitivity of the visionary and idealist. Yet all this is essential before a perfectly attuned instrument can open to receive the perfect message. I impress on you that only in certain conditions can a shaft of pure light come through. Unquestionably, mediumship is something that can be developed and improved, but I would not advocate this development for everyone, but only for the chosen vessels. The mistake made in the spiritualist movement is to advocate development of mediumistic faculties wholesale. As in the days of old, so today, there are souls who are chosen and dedicated to the task. For the rest, the dangers of forcing psychic development cannot be overstressed. Some people think that a medium becomes like an empty vessel when in a state of trance. This is not so, for although the medium's body serves to express the message of the communicating spirit, a residue of its owner's personality and mentality is retained, which has to be cleared, or else penetrated. In the process of this clearing, the message can become colored more or less. This is why a medium can become either the greatest help or hindrance to a communicator. If a medium strives to cultivate his, or her, mentality and spirituality, that medium can become of infinite use and importance. An ignorant medium does not always make the best instrument. Should an unlettered or ignorant medium be chosen for a specific task, this choice will be due to some spiritual quality or faculty inherent in the medium. Let me impress on you that the medium's intelligence must never be overbearing, but rather so docile that it lends itself to the communicator. An ignorant medium, while useful insofar as the mind does not hold back the thoughts coming through, labors under the disadvantage of being unable to bring forth the message with clarity and force. We ourselves are dealing with thoughts which have to be expressed in words to make them intelligible to you. We must always clothe them with the language we find in the mentality or power of comprehension of the medium. Therefore, you will see the necessity of that mind being well trained. We are hoping to use this medium in this way. Perhaps mine Esther will forgive an old man for saying that it is sometimes no easy matter to play a fine tune on an instrument which sometimes seems to have only one string, and that she can help much in days to come. Later I shall finish many a theme commenced in our earlier sittings. In this you will recognize the handiwork of an individual and outside communicator, so do not judge until you see the finished article. Before my passing, I had little understanding of the many difficulties holding up communication with the spirit world, but I became convinced of the reality of that communication on cold evidence, which I now recognize might not have been so valid as I once thought. Another problem, I find, is that when I come back, hundreds of ideas attempt to pour through. I must learn to regulate this overcrowding. From where I am now living, I find that it is difficult to get a human mind to receive ideas from me with clarity, although this resistance is eventually overcome. I so want to link you all together in a bond which gets ever closer, for there is so much for you all to learn. M. Botiver was present at the next meeting, and Lady Conan Doyle and her family arranged to tune in from their home in Sussex. Arthur Conan Doyle. To Botiver, you have been asking for further proof, my friend, that this is Conan Doyle communicating, that it is he who has come back to bring to his friends the glad truth of life after death. I can assure you these proofs will be given. They are in the words I speak, in the talks I have already given. Even so, far more tangible proofs are yet to come, after the message has been delivered in its entirety. People will accept my message, indeed they must accept it, for so much depends on their acceptance. I am only the spokesman for greater ones than I, and when my mission is finished I shall leave this earth and advance. I have not hurried my own family in this matter because I know they will find it difficult to accept the changed man that I am. I find that I have a certain difficulty in tuning into the extra vibrations which are here tonight. A lengthy pause ensued. Arthur Conan Doyle, it is not finished, but I have been brought back by the thoughts of my family, who are in my old home and thinking about me. What a strong personal link I feel here tonight, quite different. Quite different. You will remember that I have told you that we function on all the different planes of being, and that even from the earth man can touch all planes of being? So also with me, when I come back to earth. Conditions I have to attune myself to the degree of mental life possessed by those whom I contact. Thus, sometimes I speak from the astral plane, sometimes from planes above, but I have always to attune my vibration to the conditions provided. We must resume our discussion of these matters next week. I am now directed to speak about the work which is ahead of us. You have been prepared for years for this work, much as I myself was prepared, although I did not realize my mission. I am under the direction of the wise ones. I am their servant, their instrument, and I have to organize this group, this work in London. This teaching, these messages are to be the foundation of that work. I now come back to reveal a finer life, a nobler path than had ever dawned on my earthly conception. All must be put right. Man must be taught the truth concerning his life after death. I shall give it to you. Send it out into the world. No man who really knows me, knows my thoughts and writings will ever doubt these words. They will recognize me therein, they will and must understand what I am trying to tell them. Why was I once inundated with prophecies of the disasters and catastrophes to which humanity is now heading? Because, as I see now, I was a pivot, a central point. Thousands then hung on my words. Because of this fact I was destined to be used by the White Brotherhood in order to bring a clearer, a truer, a more exact teaching about the life beyond death. In this connection you may wonder why the Conan Doyle Memorial has been kept in abeyance. The reason is that had it gone ahead it might have got into the wrong hands, been run on the wrong lines. Men's minds have to be prepared gradually for new ideas. White Eagle said afterwards, "Evidence is not always what the mind of man considers evidence. The unseen brotherhood has its own way of producing evidence, and the inner self of man must be ready to receive it. Otherwise it will mean nothing to him." We say that the foundation of the English group of the Brotherhood will lie in this message, and that when this message goes out many people will accept and believe. People will say, "This is true. We are prepared to follow." Eventually all classes of men will be brought to believe. Your faith and loyalty must carry this thing through. Then you will never fail, never fail. Chapter 12, A Resume. While the spiritualists, being familiar with the terms employed and knowing their meaning, may find these earlier Arthur Conan Doyle messages comprehensible, some of those who are not spiritualists may feel at a loss. Perhaps what follows may help, before we go on to the main Arthur Conan Doyle message in part 2. The writer once lived in an old house, all oak beams and drafts, which had been built on a site where long ago had stood a monk's hostel. Queer things used to happen. Voices, whisperings and mutterings were heard in empty rooms, and footsteps passed one on the stairs or walked across the room overhead, to and fro, sometimes for hours. In the charming gardens was a lake with a path round it on which were frequently seen the spirit forms of three monks always together, whom we named brothers Clement, Joseph and Amias. In course of time we got to know the real nature or cause of the sounds, footsteps and whisperings. They were astralities, and caused by thoughts powerful enough to have impressed themselves on the etheric fabric of the building, everything having its etheric replica, where they had remained perhaps for centuries. They were not real sounds in the physical sense, although they might have been semi-physical. They were real only to those who could hear them. Sensitive folk registered these things and were sometimes frightened. Denser people, hearing and seeing nothing, said it was all nonsense and were duly satisfied. One cannot be too dogmatic about the monks, for they seemed alive, interested and aware of the human folk around, unlike the cold astralities indoors. They may even have a love for the gardens, the lake, and their associations with it. Or it may be that their thoughts and affections still linked them to their former home, animating what would have otherwise been only astralities. What we have all to understand is that we leave traces of ourselves on the etheric world, wherever we go. Our auras impinge both on things and on people. Our auras being infused with ourselves, that is, with our personality, character and thoughts, affect everything they touch. Much depends on whether we are strong characters or not. If the former, we leave a deeper impression on the etheric world, on the substance, or etheric matter which permeates the physical. Unlike physical impressions, those on etheric matter do not fade away. Now for another illustration, this time more fanciful, We have all heard of old houses where some famous person once slept. Elizabeth I, for example, seems to have conferred fame on innumerable bedrooms by sleeping in them.